This podcast is brought to you by our Let's Go Brandon t-shirt. Order it at gracecurlyshow.com. Enjoy the podcast.
The numbers are in. Listeners are voting often and early for Grace Curley, just like they did for her adopted grandfather. From year one to number one.
Make it so, number one.
The Millennial with the Mic is the most listened to midday show in Boston.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald, the Spectator, and the Daily Mail. Now, live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Get ready, pal.
It's Boston's number one midday show, The Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. Thank you all so much for joining me on this Wednesday afternoon. We have a lot to get to, and Joe Biden will be speaking around 4 o'clock. We will have all of that sound tomorrow for the show, so anything that's worth repeating, you'll hear cut up, spliced up for tomorrow's show, so just bear with us with that. Now, I'm very excited about my next guest. He's been on the program before. David Harsanyi is the senior writer for National Review. He's also the author of Eurotrash, which you can get online. That's a great book, and you can follow him on Twitter at David Harsanyi. David, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, David, you wrote a piece in National Review, and it's titled Texas Synagogue Hostage Crisis, a Case Study in Downplaying Antisemitism. I would obviously agree with that, but I like how you point out the original narrative almost would lead people to believe that this British national just wandered in to this Jewish house of worship when that couldn't have been further from the case. And the part of the article that really stuck out to me is you mention, listen, there's nothing wrong with being sure of your facts. There's nothing wrong with the FBI using caution to assess an event, but we don't typically see that with other crimes of this nature.
Right. I mean, I think if you had this kind of judicious reporting and FBI reporting, but also, you know, general media speculation when these things go on is that they do when they think there's something politically incorrect that they might say. If we always had that kind of standard, I think that that would be great for media. I mean, I used to say the same thing. It wasn't the sort of nitpicky questions and constant sort of assault on Trump that bothered me. I think the media should act as a to question power. I think the problem is that they only do it for certain people and they only do it in certain events. And then they're just part of, that just becomes misinformation.
Yeah, and there were a lot of points of this story that really highlighted this man's anti-Semitism. Would you kind of just go over a couple of them? Because although I read it in your piece, I haven't seen it that much in the mainstream media.
Well, I mean, some of this was reported in the Washington Post and elsewhere, initially buried deep in stories, but you had people who were watching a stream of the event, and the guy who took the hostages, he was saying, you know, that Jews only, you know, that Americans only care about Jewish lives and things like that. But also what made me laugh, not that it's that funny, I guess, but that he thought that this rabbi there could call another rabbi in New York and get this terrorist he was trying to, what is her name, Queen of Al-Qaeda or whatever, released because he thinks that Jews are all interconnected and super powerful and have control of the government of the United States so that they can get a federal prisoner released. I mean, these are kind of conspiracy theories that are incredibly popular in Islamic circles and in other countries and, frankly, among some people in this country. So to me, that makes this an anti-Semitic or at least an event that had something, an incident that had something to do with Judaism and anti-Semitism. It should be reported that way.
Absolutely. David, I want to keep going with this, but I want to bring in another element of this story, and that is on MSNBC, Nicole Wallace talked about this situation out of Texas, and she brought on Al Sharpton to break down the anti-Semitism and the situation that occurred. You wrote a piece titled Never Forget Al Sharpton's History. I know a decent amount about Al Sharpton. I work for Howie Carr. I've been in this business for a little while, but you really broke these down, and I was not aware of how many incidences he has had where he has been openly anti-Semitic. And I was wondering if you could share some of these historical facts with the audience and maybe start with the car accident in 1991.
Well, you know, I grew up in New York, in the New York area when this stuff was going on. I was growing up, I was young then, but, you know, so I guess maybe I hold a grudge, or I don't understand why people do not realize, or I wonder if people realize, younger people, what he did. I mean, you know, there was, it's a complicated situation, but going back to the Tawana Brawley situation where he basically used this girl's hoax and story to create basically riots in the city. But later on in the 90s, a Jewish man had run over in a car accident, a young black man who I think was an immigrant. And it was an accident. The police had found out that it was an accident. It's not like this guy was trying to kill anyone, but he used that situation to basically spread all these anti-Semitic tropes about diamond merchants and apartheid and all these ugly things. It's, you know, people can look it up, but what happened was that you had these riots, and a Jewish man went down the wrong street, and he was dragged from his car, and he was murdered by a mob who was yelling, "Kill the Jews." Shapton never showed any remorse for it. I mean, he had said that he wanted Jewish people to come down and do something about it, et cetera, et cetera. And it was just this ugly event. And then there was another event I think it was called Freddy's Fashion Mart, sometimes I forget, but where he had stoked this sort of anti-Semitism about this owner who had evicted a record store from his building. It's another long story. And then, you know, what happened in the end, it culminated in a person going in the store, telling all the black customers to leave, and then killing, I believe it was 7 people who were white, or most of them actually were Hispanic. And never apologized for that either. Never took, I'm not saying that he killed anyone, but he was a big part of stoking the kind of violence and fear and division in the city. And now he's on television lecturing Jews about how they should, you know, protect themselves. It's just inexplicable to me that MSNBC would do that.
Yeah, it really is wild when you think about it and you read his history with this, and then he's on there, like you said, he's going to give advice on how we can all get along better. It's pretty bizarre. David, I also have to ask you a little bit here about Kristen Sinema, because you wrote a piece, it's just a small little excerpt here from it, but you said her principled effort to save the Senate, and then you go on and you call her a patriot, and you say it's a rare instance of political courage. Why do you think this is so courageous, what she's doing?
Well, I mean, she has the entire party, her party, stacked against her, and she has the donors stacked against her, and she gains nothing from taking that position, really. I mean, they pretend that she does. They pretend that she's, you know, bought and all this, but we see that that's not the case. Emily List is pulling funding from her, and abortion groups are going to pull funding from her campaigns and things like that. I mean, she gains nothing. And she goes up there and she gives a legitimate argument, you know, for a fact-based argument for why she supports it. Incidentally, the same argument that almost every Democratic senator used only 2 years ago. And she stands up to her party. I think that's brave. I don't think she has much to gain from it other than being principled. And that's rare. I mean, it's easy. Let's admit that it's easy for Republicans right now to defend the filibuster. They have nothing to lose. Democrats have nothing to lose. But she has stood up to them and done it. I mean, think about the pressure. They were, like, confronting her in bathrooms. Her own party's constantly yelling at her. The entire media is constantly asking her. And she just sticks to what she's doing, and I think that's commendable.
I would agree. David Harsanyi, I have one more question for you. Joe Biden is set to speak at around 4:00. He's going to take questions from reporters. All right, now, I don't want to throw this at you at the last minute and say, if you could ask him one question, but if you look at these reporters, and they've disappointed us before many, many times, but if you could give them, like, a topic that you think they should start with, something that you think the American people would be very interested to know, what direction do you think these journalists should go in today?
There's so many. It's hard for me to pick one, but I suppose I'd start with asking him what happened to the $48 billion that was set aside in the bill that he supported for testing and why Americans had never gotten those tests. He, you know, what happened to this bill that was over $1.9 trillion that was supposed to help us with COVID, and why it was never, why it did nothing to stop COVID as he promised, et cetera. I think that's the first thing. And quickly, I'd put in, I'd ask him about Afghanistan. Has he ever tracked down the terrorists that killed the 13 soldiers? No. He's done nothing about that either. But I have many questions, so it'd be tough. But they're not going to ask him, probably.
I know. I think that's how we all feel. We all have a lot of questions that will not be asked today. But who knows? We'll be hopeful. David Harsanyi, thanks so much for joining us. Where can people follow you on Twitter? And where can they get your book, Eurotrash?
My book can be bought on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, wherever you buy books. And you can follow me on Twitter at David Harsanyi, H-A-R-S-A-N-Y-I.
Thank you so much, sir. Hope to have you on again soon. If you're looking for that perfect winter getaway on Cape Cod, then look no further. You need to visit the Nauset Beach Inn. Cozy up next to the warm fireplace, take in the ocean view from every room. They're pet friendly, and if you're worried about COVID, it's the perfect hotel as it has contact-free check-in and check-out. Each room is spacious with two queen beds. The Nauset Beach Inn is the only hotel inside the Cape Cod National Seashore for oceanfront weddings. Rooms go fast at $119 a night, so book early at nausetbeachinn.com. Jared, I know you were able to visit the Nauset Beach Inn, and you came back to the office bragging about it to all of us and showing us all these great pictures and making everybody jealous.
Yeah, I went in early December. Winter is a great time to go down to the Nauset Beach Inn because you don't have all the busy beach people. It's not crowded. It's very tranquil. The fire pits that you mentioned are great. So even though it's cold, you can be outside right by the fire pit staring at the ocean. The rooms, you don't hear people in the other rooms. There's no thin walls. It's quiet. It's peaceful. It's tranquil. It is literally a minute or less walk to the beach. You can't beat it.
You just can't beat this. And like I said, rooms do go fast. They're at $119.99 a night. So naturally, people are going to hop on that great deal. If you want to check it out, book early at nausetbeachinn.com. That's nausetbeachinn.com. We'll be right back because CNN has plans to create a team dedicated to covering misinformation. And I would like to hear what my audience thinks about that. It's 844-500-4242. This is The Grace Curley Show.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Grace Curley is pure Americana.
I'm so off the cuff. I'm so unpredictable. And I have a leather bomber jacket. I'll take your question anyway, kid.
This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. U.S. daily COVID-19 cases dropped 47% over the past week. Daily COVID-19 cases across the United States has dropped 47% in the past week, according to a recent data analyzed by the New York Post. So we're trending downward, which is good.
Lock it down.
Here's some more news for you. CNN plans to create a team dedicated to covering misinformation. This was the post by CNN business managing editor Alex Koppelman. Hey, Twitter, some very exciting media jobs to tell you about. I'm hiring 3 people for a new CNN team dedicated to covering misinformation. Threads about the team / jobs start here. Please feel free to share far and wide if you're interested. Reach out or apply at the links. Now, I saw this on the Post Millennial. And they actually looked into the job posting, and here were some of the carve-outs. Follow the money. Who's behind the fake news? Where does it come from? Who are the advertisers? Who are the advertisers? That's a red flag right there. Think about and cover the role played by mainstream outlets. Think creatively about what should be part of this beat and how it should be covered. This is a beat. Screaming fake news in your safety, what do they call it, in your corner. That's a beat. Collaborate with a number of other teams at CNN. Now, there's a lot of irony here, but luckily, the post-millennial pointed out just a few things. CNN is also the outlet that had to fire TV personality Chris Cuomo for covering up and helping out his older brother, Andrew Cuomo. CNN had also spread the now debunked hands up, don't shoot myth surrounding Michael Brown's death. Let's not forget the multiple CNN producers that were fired for allegations of sexual misconduct involving underage victims and pedophilia scandals. They also have, not that this makes them fake news, but they have a huge decline in viewership, to put it lightly. But when you think about all the fake news that has come out of CNN, and now they want to bring people on. And by the way, this team that's going to flag misinformation, are they going to unflag the misinformation once the misinformation becomes a fact? Like once the conspiracy theory, spoiler alert, becomes the actual news, once Jon Stewart decides that something is allowed to be talked about, does that team then go back and retroactively fix said tweet? Or do they keep it up? CNN. Do you think Nicholas Sandman could join this team? I feel like he could really help CNN sniff out some fake news. Being a victim of their fake news himself, maybe he could say, you know what, guys, this feels too good to be true. This feels like something you just did to me. I mean,
I don't understand how someone can have so little self-awareness.
It really is crazy. Misinformation at CNN. And P.S. Hey. I thought that's what Brian Stelter was doing. I don't want them horning in on Brian Stelter's gig. He figures out all of the misinformation. Misinformation.
There's no time for potato heads.
Misinformation is like jobs reports, you know? It's all in the eye of the beholder. I can see a jobs report and go, yikes. That doesn't look good. Ruh-roh. And Joe Biden can see it and say, we're making history. You know, we're breaking barriers. They said it couldn't be done. And look at us now. Misinformation can be, well, Tom Cotton said that this virus started from a Wuhan lab. That's dangerous conspiracy theorizing. We need to get him kicked off Twitter. Or, you know, you reverse that and that could just be, oh, Tom Cotton was right. Good thing
I'm Mr. Crowbar.
Crowbar Pro. That was CNN. Or is the team of fact-checking experts? Now, I guess this is the real question. Are they going to be trying to find other outlets that are promoting misinformation? Or are they? Is this more of an in-house group? Like this team is going to be in charge, I don't know, like a group of editors? That's a fun idea. Is that what they are? Because in that case, I'd be totally on board. If you're going to have someone who's going to say, you know what? I have a feeling that when Ted Lieu picked up the crowbar, it actually might have been peanut butter flavored and wrapped in tinfoil. It was a crowbar. It wasn't a crowbar. That kind of fact checking they could use. And also another fact check they could use, maybe they can also team up and fact check PBS. Or was it NPR? Someone today got fact checked. NPR. And what was the claim? They said, Gorsuch refused to wear a mask, and that's why Sonia Sotomayor won't come in person because he refuses to wear a mask.
Yeah, she was hearing oral arguments remotely because she was at risk. And Neil Gorsuch, Trump himself, basically said he won't wear a mask around the at-risk Sotomayor.
And we have been told that that fact check has proven that that is...
that is false.
Another one. If only...
that is false.
If only the CNN team had assembled!
And it was proved false when Sotomayor and Gorsuch put out a joint statement that said, no, that's not true.
Yeah, maybe we don't need a new team at CNN. Maybe we just need people to comment on their stories and say, false. 844-500-4242. We got a lot more fun coming up. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Damn, Jeffrey Toobin.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio,
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. We should do the poll question here. Today's poll question is brought to you by Fairway Financial. Preparation and planning is the key to your retirement future. Visit fairwayfinancial.net. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
How long will Biden's press conference last? Under 30 minutes, under an hour, or over an hour?
I'm saying under an hour, over 30.
Under an hour at 28%, 69% for under 30 minutes, and 3% for over an hour.
Yeah, I'm trying to check in on this hunger strike at the Capitol. I'm not getting a lot of information, but I am worried about those people. I mean, there's nothing like being hungry, especially about around this time, Jared. This is when my hunger really kicks in.
Do you think?
Well, by midday at least.
Yeah. Well, we'll all be fainting off at different times.
Yeah,
anyway.
Well, like, we can just fake it as well. Like,
yeah, because, like
fake fainting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
We might I'm all really be, good at fainting. We might have all fainted, and you still might be, like, not fainted.
It's always the time between lunch and before dinner where I really want a snack, so I can't imagine if you're going on like day five here. I just wanted to put that out there.
Hot dog! We have a wiener!
I'm not trying to say I'm a really good person or anything, but that's what I'm thinking about. That's weighing heavy on my mind. This is some good news here. This is some breaking news, actually. Breaking! Starbucks ditches Biden's vaccine mandate after Supreme Court ruling. I did not see this coming. Starbucks has become the next major company to drop their vaccine mandate after the Supreme Court ruling earlier this month on Biden's vaccines and testing requirements for large businesses. The company announced its policy reversal in a memo sent to employees. We respect the court's ruling and will comply. This is very good news. And speaking of turnarounds, Very transparent turnarounds. A friend of mine, Boris Johnson. He's not a friend of mine, but I feel like we get along. He went to a party a couple days ago. And I want to give him credit for something, Jared, because Boris Johnson goes to this party. He invites all these people. I think it might have been multiple parties. And he says BYOB, the whole deal, you know, and he invites all these people and he gets caught and he gets in trouble. And people in the UK are livid because, as we all saw here in the United States, when you're telling people what to do, at the very least, you can follow your own dumbass rules.
Yeah, like, even FDR pretended to eat vinegar pie during the Depression.
Yeah, it's more of just, you know, pretending to be one with the team, you know, pretending to go along to get along. And that's why it irked us so much when, like, Nancy Pelosi would go to the hair salon, or Gavin Newsom would go to French Laundry, or London Breed would party with Tony, or, I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. And the hypocrisy was really mind-blowing. But I have to give Boris Johnson credit. Because he got caught, and first he pulled the George Costanza. When George Costanza gets caught having sex with a cleaning lady, he says, he plays dumb. He says, is that frowned upon? Am I not supposed to do that? Had I known that you're not supposed to have sex with the cleaning people, I would not have done that. And there was a little bit of that in Boris Johnson's response. He was kind of trying to not apologize and not take the blame. He's like, no one told me that these were the rules. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it. And everyone else is thinking, bloody, you bloody bloke, you made the rules. So it fell flat. But then what he did was awesome. Because then he decided, there's only one way I'm going to get out of this. Change all the rules.
We can return to Plan A in England and allow Plan B regulations to expire. Yeah. As a result, from the start of Thursday next week, mandatory certification will end. Yeah. Organisations can, of course, choose to use the NHS COVID pass voluntarily, but we will end the compulsory use of COVID status certification in England. Yeah. From now on, the government is no longer asking people to work from home. Yeah. And people should now speak to their employers about arrangements for returning to the office. And having looked at the data carefully, the Cabinet concluded that once regulations lapse, the government will no longer mandate the wearing of face masks anywhere.
Yay! Crikey! But I have a question. This is what bugs me about this. I'm so happy for all those people who are saying, "Yeah." So happy for you. I'm not jealous at all. I'm just happy for you. I think it's great. I'm not mad. I'm really, really happy for you. But I don't understand why it can't be us. And here's
it's
why.
Science.
No. I know it's science. I get that. I've been following the science like you wouldn't believe. But here's the thing that bugs me. He got caught partying without a mask on, so he decides he has to throw all the rules out the window. We've caught so many people. So many leaders. Like, otherwise, I would say, Jared, all we need to do now is invite Biden to a BYOB, or, you know, maybe BYOI, party. Get him to show up. And then say, gotcha. You got to reverse all the rules. We gotcha at this party. But that stuff happens every day here. We have Democrats who are breaking their own rules or fleeing to other states every day, and they don't feel ashamed. They don't feel embarrassed. They don't get beaten down by their constituents who are like, how dare you do this to us, you massive hypocrite. They just keep going. It's not fair.
Well, that's because, yeah, they haven't been held accountable. There's no political stakes for them right now because they're in power. Now, when the filibuster is still around, when the voting rights bill and the John Lewis bill, when those fail and their poll numbers keep cratering, especially after today's train wreck press conference that we know is coming, I'd expect within the next couple months that since the Czech Republic now today said, nah, no more COVID anything. I think the Netherlands has said, like, there's a couple places that have done it. The dominoes are starting to fall. And I think once it's no longer advantageous and they can't use it as a means to pass their voting bill, they'll be like, ah, you know what? We did it. We beat COVID. Love us.
Yeah, but Jared, I want the instantaneous thing, like what happened with Boris. I want that. I want someone to
then
realize.
You need to call Tony and Mo Betta Brown and get them to D.C. stat for a concert.
I want someone to realize, wow, what an ass I am. Not following my own rules. Like, imagine if Governor Gavin Newsom said, I got caught going to the French Laundry. That was really stupid of me. His response was, I need to practice what I preach. I need to be a better follower and a leader. Imagine if his response had been like, oh, yeah, why can't everybody else do that? I went to the French Laundry and I'm okay. If you guys all want to go to whatever your version of the French Laundry is, I don't know where all of you guys eat. A Fuddruckers, perhaps, McDonald's. I'm sure his idea of what us regular people do, he probably has no idea. And I remember Fuddruckers being kind of a go-to joke for some liberal elite comedians. So maybe he could tell us to go there and, you know, enjoy ourselves. But no, his response was, okay, we got to keep doing this. And that was like 2 years ago.
What we need to get to with Boris Johnson is this is the fact that, like, you caught your dad coming home drunk from the bar, and he's like, all right, if you don't tell your mother, I'll buy you an Xbox.
Like, dude, bribery?
That's exactly what's going on, and that's exactly what we need here.
If Boris Johnson wants to bribe people by letting them live their lives, I'm sure they will accept said bribery. All right, by the way, Jared, can we do a very quick Dear Grace? We haven't done one in a while, but I have a few good submissions I want to get out there.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
This is, the listen lady.
Yeah, well, listen lady. I got so many problems, I don't even know where to begin here.
Okay, here's how this works. If you ever have a question, you need advice, you can either reach out to me, DM me on Twitter, G_Curly, or you can submit these to Grace at thegracecurlyshow.com. Here's the first one. Dear Grace, I feel awful saying this, and I can't believe I'm going to type it out to you. I hate my husband's friends. They are loud, they are not funny, and they never even think to bring anything to our house. When they're watching games or if we're having a party, no one brings a bottle of wine, no one offers to bring any food. Plus, one of them smells. I feel bad telling my husband that I hate his friends, but I can't spend any more of my precious weekends being miserable surrounded by these boobs. What do I do? Go ahead, Jared. You look like you're dying to comment on this.
Girls' night or girls' weekend. Just leave. Have your separate thing so you don't have to go see your friends, so you don't have to deal with his friends.
Yeah, and I guess my question would be, which isn't helpful, but my question would be, is it all of them? Like, could you take a few of them and leave some of them? Because if that's the case, then what you have to do is you have to vent to your husband. I would be honest with your husband. If you hate his friends, he's going to catch the vibe eventually. And that's part of the deal in marriage, is that you can tell your husband the people you can't stand. So you can say, listen, but if you could say, listen, I really don't like XYZ, but Tim's okay. I get along with him pretty well. Maybe one day he'll just invite Tim and his wife over. You can do like a double date situation. I wouldn't tell him you hate the whole lot of them, because that might hurt him a little bit. As far as the one who smells,
you can totally tell your husband that his friend smells. Guys don't get offended with that. He's like, yo, Brett smells.
They don't?
No, because they know.
But will his friend who smells get offended? If he says to him, hey, P.S., you smell. Do guys get offended by that?
Yeah, some people might. I wouldn't.
I would be, if someone ever told me I smelled, Jared, I'd be done. I'd be deceased. There'd be no coming back for me. I'd be horrified. But yeah, I'm not a guy. All right. So is that good advice? Well, the basis of our advice is, you know, try to make it work. Yes. Try to find a couple of them. There's got to be some that are salvageable. There's no way your husband has all terrible friends. There's got to be one or two gems in there. Gems in the haystack.
Except the smelly guy. He can't come over
anymore. No, not the smelly guy. Cut him loose. All right, next one. Dear Grace, my sister-in-law, who I love, has no self-awareness, and she posts on her Instagram, her Facebook, and her Twitter around the clock. She will post her morning coffee, her walk to the bathroom, her lunch, her new sweater, a throwback of her wedding, all before 3 p.m., it's every single day. I love her. She's so kind and she means so well. How do I tell her to cool it on the posting? Jared, I let you go first because you're a wise one.
You don't. It's her social media account. It's not yours. It doesn't reflect on you. Who cares? Let her do what makes her happy.
I would say maybe utilize the mute button. Like there's a lot of cool ways now on social media to mute people. And so that they can keep posting, but you never have to see it. And I agree with Jared. You're not going to get anything out of telling this woman that she posts too much. Because if she really loves it, you are just the bearer of bad news. And no one wants to be that. So I'd put her on mute, put her on a solid mute, and then wait and see. She might get, someone else might go rogue and tell her. Someone who's not as close to her might say, oh God, will you cool it with these? And then she'll get the message. But don't let it be you. All right, last one. Dear Grace, my best friend is turning 40 and his wife is throwing him a birthday party. She recently asked all of us to pitch in for the down payment for the place, to also split the food and drinks. Am I crazy, or should she have either made this less expensive or not had a party at all? Why am I on the hook for my best friend turning 40?
Great question. You shouldn't be. Yes, she absolutely should have spent less, or if she needed the contribution, definitely downscaled.
Yeah, I've never gone to a party where people are like, all right, you know what? Okay, sometimes you go to a birthday dinner, especially when you're in your 20s, and there's a girl whose birthday it is, and all the rest of the girls say, we'll pay for the girl whose birthday it is.
But
if once you hit 30 years old, if you're throwing a birthday party, you're paying for it. It's no one's job to throw your husband a 40th birthday party. Have a candle, have some friends in the backyard, and say happy birthday. But if you're making it at a restaurant and stuff, people are coming because they assume you just want them to be there. Maybe they'll bring you a gift, but they're not paying. This isn't like a nightclub. It's
a
birthday.
He's not my husband.
Hey, he's not my husband. 844-500-4242. All right, that was Dear Grace. I think we were helpful today.
Very helpful.
We're as helpful as we can be, you know, and if you take our advice, great. If you don't, don't.
No smelly people, and don't charge your friends.
Don't charge your friends. Always a bad idea to charge your friends. No one likes to be out of the loop, but that's how I felt in the office when Jared and Taylor would talk about their investment apps and cryptocurrency. I wanted to grow my wealth too, but I couldn't wrap my head around a lot of the current fads. There's so many current fads right now, Jared, with crypto, and people talk about them all the time, and they sound easy, but they can be very stressful.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of crypto. I'm more of a precious metals, silver, gold kind of guy.
Because it's something you know what it is.
If you hold it, you own it, as they say.
Exactly. And that's why we turn to Goldco, the leading precious metals company in the U.S. and the five-time Inc. 500 winning company with an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of positive reviews. You can trust the team at Goldco to help you protect and grow your wealth. Go to goldco.com/grace to request your free Protecting Your Wealth kit that uncovers the secrets that your financial advisor won't tell you. And if you visit goldco.com/grace now, Goldco will give you up to 10% in free silver when you open a qualifying account. That's right, up to 10% in free silver. I've already invested in silver with Goldco because I know what I'm getting and I know I'm in good hands. If you want to protect and grow your wealth like I did, you can trust the experts at Goldco. They've helped thousands of Americans own gold and silver in their retirement savings to protect them against inflation and tax hikes. That's goldco.com/grace. We'll be right back with Howie Carr. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, it's Toby from Cape Gunworks. I'm taking all your firearm and self-defense questions every Tuesday. Join Grace and me for 2A Tuesday, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
Grace Curley. She's the cool kid at the lunch table.
I want a hamburger. No, a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. I want a milkshake. I want potato
chips. You'll get nothing and like it.
This is the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Today's car crossover is brought to you by Fairway Financial. Preparation and planning is the key to your retirement future. Visit fairwayfinancial.net. Howie Carr, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you, Grace. Thanks for having me.
Now, Howie, this might come as a surprise to you. This is fresh from CNN, all right? Multiple Biden aides and outside operatives told CNN of a frustrating lack of long-term political strategy from Ron Klain or anyone else. Some days, they say, it feels like their work is defined by cable TV chyrons and topics trending on Twitter.
This is a shocking revelation.
I'm shocked. Shocked.
Oh, no. I don't think this article is going to get a retweet from Ron Klain. He's going to have to pump the brakes on the retweets for today.
Yeah, maybe some people can prosper in their careers or their personal lives by tweeting and retweeting all day long, but I don't think in politics it really works out all that often. I mean, how did Kamala Harris's presidential campaign do when everybody was obsessed with tweeting?
No, I agree. You have to be more than just a pretty blue check mark. That's for sure. Howie, what do you have coming up today? I know that you have Joe Biden, but who knows what time that's really going to happen. So what do you have in the meantime?
Right. Well, a federal judge today in West Virginia has just thrown out, or a couple of days ago, we just got the decision, has just thrown out the Whitey Bulger wrongful death lawsuit by the Bulger family. Pretty entertaining stuff. And then there's the decision, the University of Michigan that just lost its president over the weekend for sexual misconduct case.
Yes,
did you see
this? Yeah.
1,000 plaintiffs are going to share $490 million. That this guy, they were mostly men. They were assaulted by this university doctor. It's just amazing how many of these there've been. There's been, Michigan State with Nassar. There's been, Penn State with the football coach, the defensive coordinator, just all these places. It's amazing.
Wow, Howie's got a huge day ahead of him, and plus Joe Biden has a press conference later. So you don't want to miss any of this. Keep tuning in. Thanks for tuning into my show. We'll be back tomorrow. This is the Grace Curley Show.